intelligent goddamn questions, you know? I want to speak to someone dark. I want to lodge a complaint. You have no right to make people crazy. You think I investigated people's contrite stories? There is, huh? If this is just nerd gas, how come I know everything in such detail? I never been to before.
Heartland to the pyramidal structures on Mars. You're listening to another startling edition of Untamed Dimensions with me, your host, Adam Gilrightly. We welcome back tonight our good friend Viz to the Untamed Dimension airwaves, host of Visigoths from the Grassy Knoll, one of the very best web radio shows out there focusing on the wild and woolly world of conspiracy theories from a lot of different angles. One of which we'll be speaking about tonight. Viz, are you there?
Yeah, I mean, all there, no, but I'm here.
You're okay. Partly here, but we'll take that.
All right.
Before we dive into the subject matter tonight, dive into the deep end of the pool, I guess, you've made some changes to your radio show, is that correct, as far as the broadcasting schedule? And
For a number of reasons, throwing up the white flag whatsoever, because I actually work for a living, as you do, and trying to keep up a daily show was a little difficult, and it also kind of hooked me in to not being able to do anything otherwise until about 1 p.m.,
Yeah,
that was getting a little untenable. But what I did was, instead, I got out of Live 365, and there may be trouble there anyway, but that's another story. What I figured I'd do is go to all pre-records, but be able to do them and to facilitate guests and do some of my own stuff. At times, I fit better,
mm-hmm.
less stress with the family and stuff. And then what I do is every Monday now, I lay out the shows. If people want to listen to them one day at a time like they used to if they were listening live, they can do it. It's there. So to me, I think it's a win-win. The live thing is nice, but remember, I really never took call-ins. The folks were pretty good about IMing me and sending me emails, and that was really neat, and
yeah.
I missed that. But again, you know, if I were doing a call-in, it would probably be have a little more impact. So I'm still putting the stuff out there in as much hopefully quality and quantity as I have been, but it's there for their own convenience, and really nobody's complained about it.
Good deal. Yeah, I heard a show the other day, Libertas Media is rebroadcasting some of your episodes, and it was with the fellow, you got into James Shelby Downard and the Emerald City, which I guess relates to Daily Plaza. What's his name, Greg?
Greg from A Cult of Personality. I didn't know this, and Adam, if you did, you know, let me know that you were in on this, but, you know, I always looked at the allegorical level of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz as And it is. It's a pretty decent allegory of the political climate at the time, the war between, if you will, the bimetallists and the metallists, you know, and that whole financial situation, hence the Yellow Brick Road and the Silver Slippers, which in the movie were turned ruby red for aesthetics. However, where Greg hit it was to go into the replete theosophical underpinnings, because Baum, who wrote that, and that series, which we forget it is a series, laid out. I mean, I don't know, you know, Baum to me is a pretty underestimated and forgotten intellect. And so there you've got it. I mean, Adam, you've got a story on three levels. Man, I think that's pretty hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg was on top of that. Were you aware, though, that theosophy was laced through the wonderful Wizard of Oz?
I wasn't, but it doesn't surprise me. It seems like there's a lot of interconnection between the work I've done and the Greg from, it's the Cult of Personality, is that the name? Yeah, as well as Kent Bentkowski. I wrote that article on the Eyes Wide Shut several years ago, where I noticed a lot of these allusions to the Wizard of Oz, which kind of struck me, because in the whole mind control community and the lore of mind control, particularly the Monarch programming, the victims or alleged victims, whatever the case may be, always brought up that this Wizard of Oz imagery was used as part of their programming matrix. And so, you know, you see these allusions as well in Eyes Wide Shut. And these things seem to connect. The Alice in Wonderland is too, seems to come up time again in the mind control war and these type of things. And Baum and, you know, these other writers seem to be tapped into something going on there behind the scenes, whether it's secret societies or conveying these messages in some type of subliminal way a lot of the time. So anyway, I thank you for turning on me on to these fellows. Kent Bentkowski came on the show, and this was about a month ago, and by far and away it's been our most popular episode.
I have to apologize to another individual whom Greg would credit for a lot of what he related during that interview. And the individual goes by the name of Synchronos 23, and you can hit her from his website, which is occultofpersonality.com. But she did a great job. There, I gave away her sex, so you know it's a shame. But anyway, and that should not be overlooked. And you can find her, and you can go back and forth. But I think that, to me, I still haven't had enough. I'm just amazed at work. You know, I wish I could write on one level well. And the individual did it on three, and did a pretty kicking job on each one.
What was he doing, though?
Well, Baum?
What was he trying to achieve on writing on all these different levels, you think?
From what I got from the discussion and reading what he did, I just think, first of all, as a political situation, I think it's excellent because of what was going on at the time with Bryant and such and McKinley. The whole bit about bimetallism means that you would stop, shall we say, the elites from screwing around with just the one metal. You had the other as a head, so they did something with gold. You had the silver. Obviously, you saw that not happen, and for the reasons that the bankers know best. Mm-hmm. And so for that, I mean, I think it was just a great reportage of what was going on. To tell it in the vehicle of a fable is a great idea. And as far as the theosophy goes, I don't know if maybe subliminally you could win over initiates to the religion or whatever, or if it was, as we see oftentimes today, Adam, and we've talked about this, and I'm sure you've done this with others, that when you look at entertainment, be it TV or movies, you're getting winks and nods and elbows in the ribs about the way things are. And I just want to add one thing. To give you an example of what I'm talking about, we just purchased the three seasons of Millennium. Because when it first started back, I guess, 96, 97, I wasn't thinking the way I was now. I watched it strictly as a profiling show, which I still think is better than anything out today.
Mm-hmm.
But as the thing went on, they started talking about things that go bump in the night, much like X-Files did also.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm talking about. Was he doing the same thing? Perhaps. maybe it was a work that they all could laugh about, as far as, you know, we got something over on the dummies. But I'm not so sure that's the truth. I just, you know, he just did a great job, and you cannot argue the fact that certainly it embraced a lot of theosophical thought. I guess at the time, Madame Blavatsky was still a hot item. Of course, we're looking at, what, the second half of the 19th century, so I'm sure a lot of this was very new and interesting to people, just like you see today, I guess, with the resurgence in the Kabbalah.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Another guest you had on for many, many episodes was Andy Colvin, the Mothman photographer. And that was a fascinating series. Can you, I guess we're not able to download those anymore?
Oh, you know, I've been shrinking the archives. I had up to 6 months. And that might be the case, yeah.
Of course, they can buy them from you as well, right?
Nice plug. Yeah, they can.
And you got to understand the reason you have to shrink your archives. I mean, you've done hundreds and hundreds of episodes, so it gets untenable after a while having all these available to download. But you had those available for quite a while, and... Anyway, that's another researcher you turned me on to, and I've kind of formed a relationship with Andy, had him on the show, and we're actually kicking around the idea of doing a book together on, you guessed it, Mothman.
He emailed me recently, and it was good to hear from him. It's hectic for him, too. I mean, he has to work and do other things, and that also gives him a certain freedom as well from being bought out by whatever concerns.
Yeah.
He emailed me recently, and I was really happy to hear from him, and he did allude to that. And, again, here's the thing. I mean, the things we went through, I mean, they just have so many tributaries. You know, it's labyrinthine. And,
yeah.
And I wish, and I know he does too, that you could travel down every one of them. And, it, you know, and this kind of pertains a little bit to what we're doing as far as what goes on in the funky Northeast.
Yeah.
It was just never-ending. And, I mean, we actually dedicated a couple of shows, as you may well know. He just had to get the notes out to just throw it out there.
Yeah.
And people could do what they wish. He's not a crackpot whatsoever. No, you know, deference to you.
yeah.
But it is kind of fascinating, wouldn't you not say?
He reminds me of a shaman in a certain sense. You know what I mean? He kind of... Is aware of all these connections and documents them, and some, you know, times they form a complete picture, other times they don't necessarily, but he's out there trying to put a lot of things together.
Yeah, and, you know, I tell you, it's unsettling to a certain extent, but the more I look into this, the older I get, the more I realize that everything that we poo-pooed as science fiction or magic or stories about, you know, just, you know, like I said, fictional tales about Merlin, you know what? It probably was all true. one of the things I'm looking at in this last email, he gives an exchange of a transcription of one of our shows, and we were talking about Sarah Jane Moore, I guess, and then I said to him, can you imagine living in a neighborhood with Charlie, meaning Manson? I said, well, what a hoot that would be.
Yeah.
And that's an idea of what he was involved with. I mean, that neighborhood had some really interesting characters go through it. And, you know, West Virginia, for a lot of reasons, too, is interesting for other things, like where Mount Weather is and where the shadow government really does go to hide if the hard rain falls.
Yeah, exactly. Now, just pulled up your website here. Folks can get there by going to www.visigoth.com. And that's the way to listen to the show. You go in there and click on audio, I guess, and you'll pull up the latest program. You also have some photos there of certain murals from the New World Airport.
Yeah, two things have happened.
These are bizarre.
Well, you know, you got to ask yourself sometimes, like, what is with that? You know, that they are very, very unsettling photos. There's some thought now, and I'm trying to get the latest word from Bill Zabel, who's done a lot about that. He lives out there, did a lot of work on Columbine, too, and that might be somebody you want to talk to about the real deal and what happened that day. But you look at these things, and it's not pleasant. You know, it has a supposed happy ending, but there's no mistaking that the images, first of all, I think, and most people think, are not befitting something that should be in an airport. And secondly, it does tell a very interesting story. So we did a show where he broke that down, and there was an individual by the name of Bob Bixler who really was the one who got a lot of this information, doesn't feel himself necessarily a media type, and handed it off to Bill. And then Bill came on and talked about it, so I don't want Bixler to go without any kind of credit. And so he broke it down, and people have gone out there since and said, yeah, that's kind of strange. Not really recent. But another thing I'll tell you is that my friend Pilot Pete, who knows me from childhood, which obviously can cause severe brain damage for others, he doesn't want to know about conspiracies. But I said to him, take a look out there. You know, I'm like, you tell me what's up with that. And he came back and said, that's pretty strange. And not to mention the gargoyles and all that other stuff that's there. So, yeah, there's a photo, I guess you could call it a section for that. And, you know, not forget either, if you've ever gone there, Adam, and that is what John Valentini from Australia did with collecting 9/11 visuals prior in movies prior to 9/11. You can write some off as coincidence, but I'll tell you what, there are some very, very convicting examples of why they would use those numbers. And I'm not saying the actors knew. You only need one person or so. The rest don't know what's going on. So is the fiasco photos has the section with the 9/11s. To include some ads that are very strange as well prior to the event.
That's up on the website as well. Now, getting back to this New World Airport, this is the one in Denver, right?
Yeah, and that is its official name. They all call it Denver Airport, but it is New World Airport.
Weird.
It was consecrated by the local chapter of Freemasons.
Yeah.
The capstone there.
And there's a lot of Freemason imagery, I mean, besides these strange murals. Is that correct?
You know, I can't say other than the dedication that there is, there is a cult trappings to it. There's no doubt about it. Now, we all talk about Freemasonry as being such, and you're always going to piss off people who are thinking about the guys down the block who really don't know what's going on. And almost to, I guess recently I've been sensitive to it, and I was even speaking with Greg when he was on last, and I'm going, you know, I'm more inclined. Let's get beyond the 33rd degree Scottish Rite Freemason head. I mean, you know about Albert Pike. You know about Manly Hall. When you get there, it's weird. But it goes back to Mystery Babylon religion. This has been with us for millennia. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily, Masonic in overtones, but it really does go back to occultism.
Yeah.
Rainbows and, all that other stuff. I mean, that in itself is bad, but the usage that it does embrace as,
right.
Certain occult religions look toward it.
Now, looking at this mural, it's kind of like it's a small world meets Columbine.
I'll tell you what. That's a line I'm going to steal. Yeah, you're right. Because it does have that, it's a small world after all. It's all hold hands and stuff. But,
yeah.
You're right. Then it gets into this stuff.
And there's this bizarre stormtrooper guy with a gas mask and a sword and a little child with praying under his boot almost. And it's multicultural, bringing in a new world, new world order. It's just really very strange. I just pulled this up a couple minutes before I started the show to see what was new, and this is amazing. I don't know what else to say.
You could break it down for a long, long time, and find more and more and more. The gentleman who did this, he paints in that style, which is kind of what you would say is Southwestern, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Sure. But all that's involved is certainly New World Order-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the canard is, if you're asking me, is the fact that, this bit about one world, one world this and one world that, it sounds good. We understand it's meant to, but it's a trap, and Orwell had it right. I mean, it'll be totalitarianism, but it will be obviously advanced as the League of Nations was after World War I, after the UN was after World War II. We're going to have another, I think, nasty conflagration, and then you're going to see this thing about, why don't we just become one big happy family? Sounds good, understandable, but once you're inside it, the trap will be sprung, and we'll find ourselves, as Orwell said, with a boot heel ground in our face forever.
Yeah. This ties into a speaker I saw at the Conspiracy Con. I was there last weekend in San Jose. You ever heard of the Conspiracy Con? It's the seventh annual one, and one of the speakers was this Ashley Mote. He's from the Parliament in England, and he's against the whole, he's a, you know, spokesman against the whole EU coming about.
Mm-hmm.
He was touching on a lot of this stuff, and multiculturalism is, you know, a part of this whole movement, and you know, it's coming to us too. You've heard of the Three Amigos?
Sure.
And he started pressing a lot of kind of hot buttons there with, you know, U.S., be prepared to, pretty soon you're going to have a Hispanic in the White House with his finger on the button, and some other comments like that as well. And people got real uncomfortable. I remember when he said that, one of the ladies there got up in a huff and stomped out, and a friend who was sitting by me, you know, there was a lot of different things going on at this conference, people talking about reptilians, and my friend leaned over and said, I think the audience is more comfortable hearing about reptilians.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point. I don't get upset about this mainly because, and I think you know, and you may feel the same way, I'm not sure, but to me, you can put a chimp, well, they already did put a chimp in the White House, didn't they?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. So, you know, put a Latino in, put whatever you want in, because what's going to happen is going to happen regardless of the agenda.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, there's no doubt that you'll see a Democratic regime take over in 08, which is one of the reasons why I think at this late date now, and you're hip to what's going on, so this is not a big aha to you. But all these revelations about, you know, going into Iraq under false pretenses, et cetera, Bush bashing, war bashing, is happening now, I think, to get a lot of uncomfortable Republican voters and the fence-sitters and undecided to go Democrat. I believe they can throw any election they want to. They've demonstrated that has happened. But this time they could let it go, for, you know, and I think what they want is to psychologically manipulate people to go Democrat.
Yeah.
And then I think like World War One and Two, you're going to see, guess what, a Democrat in the office when the doo-doo hits the oscillator big time.
This game has been played before. And,
yeah, and these cats are not highly original, but they don't have to be because guess what, the script works time and time again. Wait a generation and pull it off again.
Yeah, and you have a lot of new suckers, you know, there's always a new...
Well, you know, I'm a little upset with my generation, only because we knew in the end that Vietnam was about things that, other than what we were told. And when this whole thing started with Iraq, I'm like, am I watching a bad rerun?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
no,
yeah.
Don't, come on, folks, you know how this works out. And here we go again. And I mean, I've sat, and I'm sure you have too, you know, over months and said to myself, my God, it's like watching Walter Cronkite in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know, and then I thought of that song, you know, When Will They Ever Learn? And it's like, well, never. So there you go. I mean, here we are again.
Yeah, when the Twin Towers came down, you know, all of us, I think, felt a certain amount of outrage.
Mm-hmm.
And certain people tapped into that, and, you know, it was a perfect vehicle to push through a lot of things that, you know, the ramifications will be felt for a long, long time. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Well, let me just say this, another shameless plug. We have the Utikins for 9/11 Truth come on every month, and yeah. they mix some humor in, but they're very serious about what they do.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, like yourself also, I mean, you do serious stuff, but, you know, if you do it all the time, my God, I mean, it gets so lugubrious. You know, you got to... If you don't laugh a little bit, you go insane.
Yeah.
So they come on, and are you familiar? Let me ask you this. You know the Blowtorch, Clear Channel, whatever, carries Rush Limbaugh and whatever, Beck and all this stuff. Are you familiar with an idiot by the name of Schnitt? Yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it? Who named this kid this? You know?
No, I don't know Schnitt.
You don't know Schnitt?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, he's out of Tampa, as Beck is. He's not as widely known. But I can't, you know, every so often when I go out and run for an errand or something like that, I'll put on Clear Channel just to see what the enemy is doing. And this guy came on with the most ridiculous, support of the government story and attack on Rosie, because, you know, lately Rosie's been coming out saying all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm listening to this going, you're an idiot. And not only are you an idiot, but the vagary of speech that you're using no one would ever be allowed on our side of the street of using. So what's going to happen is I post a whole week's worth of shows every Monday. Coming up this Monday, June 4th, that would be, we're gonna take the offending audio that I heard and break it into blocks and deconstruct it. Because this guy, I mean, he's not even good at what he does. I mean, Limbaugh, we can believe. He says he's a carny barker. He is. But this guy should not be let out of the doghouse. he's dangerous. So we're going to do that. If anybody's interested, you might get both a hoot and an eye-opener over what we do with the famous remarks by Schnitt.
Well, I will check that out. It's kind of sad that Rosie O'Donnell's one of the leading spokesmen. I guess it's nice somebody's speaking out, but...
Well, you see, this is all seen as Republican bashing and Democratic supporters.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and what we do is we separate ourselves, going, we're not Republicans, we're not Democrats, we're not getting on Bush, we're just telling you, your government kills people. It's done it throughout history. Get over it. It's not good, but, you know, let's get past the parties to the real problem. And unfortunately, it doesn't happen. I'm afraid that, you know, Rosie and a lot of the Hollywood types like Charlie Sheen, Mr. Streisand and all them, you know, I think they really believe something went down that day, but would they be doing it if it were a Democrat in the Oval Office? I would hope so, but I kind of doubt it.
Yeah. Hey, at this point, my goodness, we've almost gone about a half an hour and haven't got to the topic of tonight.
Well, I was going to rudely ask you, how long are we going tonight?
An hour.
Okay, we better get going.
And we can go a bit longer as well. The shows normally go for an hour, but I have the flexibility to go an hour and a half, so don't feel rushed.
All right, well, what I'll do is...
But at this point, I need to take a short musical break, and if you need to go, shake the dew from the lily or get a refreshment of some sort...
Well, that's why I keep the bucket next to me, but I'll be here when you get back.
Okay.
Okay.
Be back shortly.
Be careful of what you say. Be careful in every way. Be careful of what you do. Big Brother is watching you. Be circumspect and discreet. Stay light on your mental feet. One slip and you know you're through. Big Brother is watching you. Conform with all directives. Remember, obedience pays. And when you watch that TV screen, remember it works both ways. You'll disappear in a wink, unless you can double think. You'll vanish into the blue. Big Brother is watching you. Watching you. Big Brother is watching you. Conform with all directives. Remember, obedience pays. And when you watch that TV screen, remember it works both ways. Disappear in a wink, unless you can double think. You'll vanish into the blue. Big Brother is watching you. Big Brother is watching you. Big Brother is watching you. Big Brother is watching you.
Alrighty, you're listening to Untamed Dimensions with Adam Gorightly, and our guest tonight is Visigoth, host of Visigoths from the Grassy Knoll, and you just heard Sheldon Allman with Big Brother is Watching You. You there, Viz?
Yes, I am.
So, what's the deal with this Order of the Arrow?
You know, I didn't want to be disingenuous. This is a strange situation, and I'd be lying to you if I told you that I know what I'm in the middle of. And this has been happening over a year or so, and it's just coming from different parties, but we're coming down to a common thread here. I'm going to ask you something. I'm not talking about ley lines or anything like that, but let me ask you this. Do you believe, especially in the lower 48, that there are places, regions, you know, I don't know how specific you want to cut it, where there's, like, shall we say, a hotbed of activity,
mm-hmm.
of certain interesting goings on?
Well, I can answer this in a couple different ways. Not addressing the subject of, you know, ritual occult activities, but throughout the world, you know, there's different thoughts that throughout the ages people have considered magic or holy, or there's a certain energy there. You know, there's those type of spots. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, I just wanted your take on it. Excuse me while I die.
Now, it makes sense that if you're going to get involved in ritual occult activities, that you would seek out these certain energy spots, and whether you want to label them areas where ley lines intersect or that, you know, it get into a lot of semantics, but, you know, throughout millennium, people have known about these spots. And I have a friend, actually, who is a real rational person for the most part. I mean, she grew up through the counterculture of the 60s, a very good writer, excellent writer. She's kind of my mentor. And she is also a power place dowser, and she goes around to these different sites and can pick up the energy. And one of the things you'll see at these sites are stones. Tune in, collect energy, according to these folks. So that's my knowledge of power spots.
One of the ones we talk about, and we have, and for good reason, for quite some time, it's not the focus right now, what I'm going to speak to, but Colorado, for instance. I mean, there's a lot of strange stuff that goes on there. And we kind of kid Bill Zabel, who lives out that way, you know, about the kind of neighborhood he's in. A lot of interesting things that have gone on and are still going on. And I'm gambling, and I'll bet the house on this, as you were talking about the Three Amigos and such, I think you will find in time, whether we're around to see it or not, that if we get to the point of the North American Union, you'll see Denver become the big hub, and D.C. will become a moot point, and may even get dusted by a nuke or something, I think, as a symbol, if you will, that let's forget about the United States as it was. It's a whole new ball game. We're one big happy family. So anyway, that's the deal about Denver. But there's two other places that I find very strange. One of them, like I said, is West Virginia, around the area that Colvin lived and wrote about. But there's another one in southeast Pennsylvania where it just, you know, started to hit me after doing shows with people who had no idea what the others were saying, that are like, what's going on here? Now, it started not, this is not the beginning of it. I'll jump in the middle. But the person who alerted me to what he thought was rather interesting goings-on was Matthew Tartaglia, who's been on our show. He was a responder to 9/11 with U.S. Search and Rescue with his outfit out of southeast Pennsylvania. Well, he went out to a place called Ralph Stover State Park. I don't know, maybe it's about 10 miles east of Quakerstown. If anybody wants to do a map quest or whatever, you'll find out the general area that it's in. And he took probably 3 to 4 dozen photos of a site that was rustic, but at the same time very ornate, or, if you will, replete, in the placing of what you know there is in the Northeast, and that's basically bluestone. And there were altars and lined walkways, pillars. And he's like, what's going on with this?
Viz, let me interject real briefly. If the listeners want to go to my blog, which I'll repeat this a couple times, http://gorightly.wordpress.com com. I'll repeat it one more time. http://gorightly.wordpress.com. I've put up a series of three photos you emailed me of this mm-hmm. area you're talking about, and folks can go look at these right now as you're speaking. So proceed.
All right, and there's just a few of them, but that is Matthew's work. Well, I got some more today from another individual who went to Ralph Stover State Park and came upon exactly what Matthew came upon. And he went as far as to say, as I took a look around, there was candle wax that had been, you know, and a good bit of it dripped on certain pillars, if you will, or whatever you want to call them. Now, this in and of itself doesn't make anything nefarious.
Uh-huh.
If I've got it right, I haven't spoken to Matthew in a while about this, but the second individual with whom I spoke today said that he found this site beyond no trespassing signs in what he thought was still the state park, or may in fact be adjacent private property. Now, when I went on both Google and the official site of the park, you know, I don't know, but the maps don't line up. And anybody who goes there, and I wouldn't say do it now, but if you go and you take a look, however you get to Ralph Stover State Park, if you take a look at Google with the hybrid of both the map and the satellite, and then you go to their site, I mean, I'm looking at this, and it's not making any sense to me. Things pop up that apparently don't show up on Google geographically. I don't know what that means. I'm just telling you, it isn't congruous. Okay. Both of them said when they got to the place, their spirit just got bummed.
Oh.
And they just didn't like where they were. Now, Matthew, I believe, has found out that that is a ceremonial meeting site for, I guess, the highest level of scouting called the Order of the Arrow. You can't find a lot out about the Order of the Arrow, and I would be lying to people if I told you that I got deep into it. I'll give you a thumbnail that anybody can go look for themselves, but this was not an original scouting level as it was first developed. This was created by two gentlemen about 1915, and their names were E. Erner Goodman and Carol A. Edson, and they were both Freemasons.
Mm.
And they started something that eventually was assimilated into scouting. I believe that time came somewhere around 1922 or so. So this was not obviously in the original continuum and later was brought in. One of the things they talk about, and that is Freemasonry and its traditions and rituals probably contributed more to the basic structure of the rituals than any other organization. That would be the Order of the Arrow rituals. In an interview with Edson during his later years, he recalled that the task of writing the first rituals of the Order of the Arrow was assigned to an early member who was a 32nd degree Mason. And it says familiar terms such as lodge and obligation were borrowed from Masonic practice, et cetera, et cetera. And people can look at it for themselves. Now, you got to understand something. There were two young men whom I'm familiar with. I won't say where, and I would say that they were acquaintances. We kind of worked at the same place, and I understood that they were in the Order of the Arrow. One of them I spoke to about 2 weeks ago. Now, I'll be honest with you. You know, I was not going to pump this kid, you know, for what he would consider nefarious purposes,
mm-hmm.
right? Journalistically, it would be unethical. But he did tell me, he did not deny that the Order of the Arrow was Masonic in nature, was somewhat secretive, and that what you don't find out on the websites that deal with this, that it goes beyond the Order of the Arrow to the Brotherhood. Now, he called it a service organization, as you well know. The Masons are good about that. The Shriners are excellent about that. But then there's something way, way beyond that, you know, is a little questionable. So, I mean, I'm not one in for secret societies or the secret handshakes or the groups or whatever, but here's something that very little is known about. And on the websites, they're not really too soliciting of questions and further information. There is a supposed headquarters in Vermont where, quote, the barn is located. I asked him if he had any idea where that was in Vermont. He said he did not. I can't find the town it's in, and that's all I can tell you, but...
I'm sorry, what is located in Vermont?
They call it the barn.
The barn?
Yeah. And, I mean, this is supposedly, I guess, you know, ground zero for the order of the arrow.
Okay.
But it does not tell you what town it's in. I asked him if he was aware of it. He said he was not. I'm not affixing anything occult to this individual. And he was, like I said, he was very open about the fact that, yes, it was based on Masonic tenets. And of course, you know, there's a lot of things that are, too. One of them, by the way, is the Grange, which we only think about a bunch of Hasties getting together. But, I mean, obviously, they also have their degrees after a certain point. And you wonder, you know, okay, so, like, what's the purpose? Is it innocuous? Okay, fine. I don't know. I tend not to think so, but I can't prove otherwise. So that's how I found out about the Aura of the Arrow. Matthew brought it to my attention, took a bunch of photos, and I even can give you a zip if you're interested later on as to what he saw.
Mm-hmm.
Again, today, another person resonated with what Matthew said and sent some more also. This goes to a larger situation. I don't necessarily know how to connect it all, but believe it or not, it winds up with the Trace Amigos.
Oh, for really?
Oh, yeah. This is good stuff. Another thing I want to let you know is, and now we're going to go to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
We had a guest on by the name of Kathleen Sullivan. Now, you've had Maury on, right?
I just had her on.
That's right. The 29th.
Day before yesterday.
Right. Maury and Kathleen had, I would say, somewhat similar experiences, tragically, as children. Kathleen's written a book called Unshackled, A Survivor's Story of Mind Control. And she was raised in Reading, Pennsylvania. In southeast Pennsylvania, she was born to a group, to a Nazi couple. I mean, Nazis like from Germany, who hid amongst the Pennsylvania Dutch, and she was raised up to do things about which she will not still not speak. And if she's afraid of being, indicted for whatever she's talking about, we're way past 7 years, and there's only one thing I can think of that doesn't have a statute, and we'll leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
So Kathleen wrote this book, Unshackled. She's come out of it. She's been healed. Really powerful lady. But let me read you what she said here. Although the animosity was strong between our countries during this time, Germany and America, that is, it paled in comparison to the hatred most Americans felt toward Germans during World War I and World War II. Because Dad's mother was a German-American. She and others in their community protected themselves by hiding their heritage. They did this by claiming that they were Pennsylvania Dutch. And I'll leave it there. Now, what happened was when she was in interview, we were going back and forth. I had read the book. Harry sat across the way in the studio, and I could see him thinking. And he asked Kathleen a question. He said, Kathleen, aren't you trying to tell us that there's a whole lot more Deutsch than we think in Pennsylvania Dutch? And she said, you're absolutely right. But, you know, it makes sense in a way that there is a heavy Germanic influence in that area. If Nazis came over, they did not have to fake being Christian as they would if they were involved with Mennonites or the Amish. But with the Pennsylvania Dutch, they all spoke German, and they just blended in. And again, this took place, as I said, in southeast Pennsylvania. We go further into an interview I had with Russ Dizdar, who deals with victims who were outed or whatever from occult groups. And when Russ was on and sharing what he did, you know, I said, Russ, I mean, do you find any connection with southeast Pennsylvania? And he, you know, it was one of those really neat moments where he stopped and he went, you know what? He said, you're absolutely right. He said, a lot of this stuff goes back to people who were raised in that section. Go a little further. Dr. Ellen Lachter, a psych out of California, San Diego, also works with victims of ritual abuse. We were talking and she goes, you know what? You're right. So many cases come out of southeast Pennsylvania. So I'm like, all right, what does this all mean? All right? Now, do you want me to take another step further?
Take a step.
Okay. I have on an individual by the name of Paul Topete, who fronts the group called Poker Face, who comes out of southeast Pennsylvania. And he sent me a bunch of stuff. He sent me photos of a compound, I guess you can call it, in Quakerstown, Pennsylvania, just a little due west of where Ralph Stover Park is. Now, do I know this is all connected? I don't. And, you know, this may make me sound wacko and all this other stuff because I don't know what I'm involved in. All I know is something's shaking down there. So he sends me these photos of this compound of Rosicrucians. And anybody who wants to take a look at it can go down to www.soul, paternitas.org, real simple. And the homepage will say the Fraternitas Rosae Crucis, the authentic Rosicrucian fraternity in the Americas and the Isles of the Sea. And it will show you a number of photos. They are truncated. It's a truncated pyramid, a completed pyramid at opposite ends of what you might call a contemplative grotto. It is built on land that was in the Clymer family. It's on Clymer Road, and Clymer was one of the founding fathers. Very well-heeled, as it states, he possessed a large fortune, held public securities, and helped create the Bank of Pennsylvania. It's on that property. There is also something called Beverly Hall there. Now, so what's the big deal with this? Well, you know the role the Rosicrucians have played. I would say that they were very much involved. I mean, everybody thinks about Freemasons, but the Rosicrucians even predate them to a certain extent when the colonies were being founded. And they came out with something in 1916 at the 68th Convocation, a book they published called The Fundamental Laws. And it's really interesting stuff. And I'll tell you what, I'll cut to the chase with this, because I'm not going to go ahead and read everything, although it is mind-blowing. But one of the things, well, actually the thing I found that was most startling, and they go back to the whole idea. Right, can I just read a little paragraph here?
Sure.
All right, it says, Ancient Mysteries of Egypt Given in an Initiation of 3 Degrees. This is in the book entitled Fundamental Laws, published in July 16, 1916. It said, under the authority of the Rose Cross Order, founded in America in 1858, prominent delegates of the order were gathered in the most remarkable enclave held during the last 5,000 years. I mean, how would they know? The publication of whose records now opens to the world the connection of Egypt in her ages of true religion, power, and glory with the mystic seal of the United States, which we know as the Great Seal, whose heraldic symbolism declaring a mighty destiny of America has, until now, only been known to a limited number. Later on, if you don't mind, I'd like to read you what it says about the education system that these Rosicrucians, and they consider themselves pretty much up there with the umbrella group we know as the Illuminati.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the one that sent chills down my spine. Again, remember, this was written in 1916, and I'm going to page through this stuff so I can get to it. And I think if you've not heard this, it's quite interesting. So pardon me while I page through this stuff.
No problem.
Play the Jeopardy music, will you?
I'll mention while I was at the conspiracy conference last weekend, one of the things I had planned to do was I always wanted to see the Rosicrucian Museum.
Oh, in California?
Yeah, it's in San Jose, the same place the conspiracy conference was going on. So my friend there, who I was meeting at the conference, Douglas Hawes, who is also, he's my source for the Tuesday World Revelations, I've been talking to him, you know, for the last couple months. Yeah, when we get together there, I'd like to take, you know, have you run me over to the Rosicrucian Museum and check it out. And as it turned out, that's exactly what we did. There was a banquet dinner at the conspiracy conference, and I met up with my friends Ken Thomas. He edits Steam Shovel Press. Mm-hmm. He was with a correspondent for Hustler, of all things, another friend, Skylar. And they got to talking about they were planning to go to the Rosicrucian Museum the same time Doug and I were, so it was a synchronicity there, and we ended up checking it out. That, a lot of interesting synchronicities going on here with you talking about that, and it's quite an amazing place. They have one of the largest collection of Egyptian artifacts in the world, but maybe that's neither here nor there, but another one of those synchronicities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that this this chapter, or this branch, or whatever, however they want to refer to themselves to this very day, you know, somewhat, geez, almost 100 years later,
mm-hmm.
Would call themselves the real deal, and I think would shunt off the California branch, if you will. That's my guess. That's what I think I debunked
yeah.
from what I read. And these are serious cats, and they have statements to the effect. And, of course, everybody, well, maybe not everybody, but people wonder, like, what's the preoccupation with Egypt? Well, I would say, of course, that the ancient mysteries, the esoteric knowledge It goes back to Egyptian sun god worship, and before that to Mystery Babylon religion under Nimrod. And there is this fixation with Egypt. Obviously, where else can you find what you see as monuments to this greater than you find in Egypt, but also in the Yucatan? And people have batted that around quite a bit. And you know, if there were a continental drift, which I think we did have, there were land masses that, of course, were in proximity to each other that are not now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so here we go. Written by a climber, by the way. This is what he states. Again, July 6th. This is July 6th, 1916. He writes, "However, though this appears the truth, it is not the truth. The reason why it has never been cut is because the time is not yet, as the capstone has not yet been set." All right. He's referring to why, like, for instance, on our dollar bill, on the backside of the Great Seal, that the capstone is extended above the truncated pyramid. He says, "And what is this capstone? My reader, prepare for a shock. When Atlantis ruled the world, that which is now America was connected with Egypt by what is now Mexico. And in Mexico, in the territory of Yucatan, there is a pyramid in which the fire philosophers worship God as divine fire and life, in like manner as did the initiates of Egypt, for the two were then one." And here we go. "America is not complete and will not be complete, cannot be complete, until Mexico is again part of America as she was in the long ago. And when Mexico is once again a part of the United States, then will the capstone have been set on the pyramid and the reverse side of the United States seal will be cut."
Wow.
Does that
pretty heavy stuff there.
Make your day? Yeah.
That was written when?
1916. And so now we look at the North American...
These are dangerous times and interesting times, too.
You know what they really are? Go ahead, I'm sorry, Adam. Go.
No. I was just going to say it's, you know, it is a dangerous time to live, but it's also damn interesting to see it through. You know, maybe we can make a change.
Well,
maybe we can do something, you know.
It's funny. When we were watching Millennium, and like I said, it's real lightweight right now.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things they asked in the course of the show was, so why is the Millennium Group doing what it's doing? And Frank Black, who is the protagonist of the series, played by Lance Henriksen, said, well, they're getting tired of waiting for a happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
I think I know where this goes. I wish I could be more optimistic. I'm not.
Yeah.
You can say this. I mean, there is a bit of a quickening, and some people get upset with me and say, well, over the end of the world. And, I'm looking at Scripture as telling me, no, not the end of the world. There'll be a millennium after the tribulation.
As the song goes, the end of the world as we know it.
Well, the trib is something I think is very, whether you believe or not, I think it bears out the fact we're going to see a third world war, and we're going to see something come across that will show itself as a peace bringer, a light bringer.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be a canard. It'll be a ruse. But what I will say is this, and that is it's undeniable, regardless when, it hits the fan, that we are seeing a lot of things that have been foretold in so many other corners of the world by many who did wish this day to come, this one world government or one world order or whatever. And we're seeing it kind of, to me, with a certain amount of rapidity. It could still be 50 years off. I don't know. I mean, it's always bad when you try to time things. But, I mean, when I looked, and that's one of the things, Adam, I went back and I read the works by the conspirator's own hand that goes back a generation or more, at least in recent times, so to speak. And, I mean, they promised it, and they're making good on it. They're a very dedicated lot, and they, they did not necessarily have to see the fruition of it, but they dedicated themselves to the furtherance of it. And I tell you, a lot of bricks have fallen into place.
There's an allegorical reference. The bricks are falling into place. Intend that?
No, it just comes natural to me. And that's a frightening thought. Yeah, and the other thing I wanted to say, too, so what we get with the Order of the Arrow, and this all leads into what I consider a hotbed of activity in Southeast Pennsylvania. I don't know why, but it did come to me as being very interesting. If you could think about across the years, somebody chiming in with this and somebody chiming in with that, and then all of a sudden you're wondering, like, what's going on, And so, like I said, we start in we start in Ralph Stover State Park in Pennsylvania, we end up in the North American Union. I think there's a continuum. Mm-hmm. And to try to get somebody to come in with me, I did talk to Ellen Lachter, and let me just say it didn't go as well. Ellen understands, you know, a great deal, but she feels, you know, that this is not connected. And what she works with are a nasty, the victims of nasty groups of people, but I do not believe, you know, that they in any way, shape, or form reflect the true Illuminati, as we know it, born on May 1st, 1776. I don't think that there's a connection there, and I'm asking her, would you just take a look at the big picture? What you're dealing with, you know, basically, and I hate to say this because people are being killed and hurt by this, but they're probably street punks compared to what's really going on.
Yeah.
In a word, yes. And so, you know, like I said, she wasn't going to come on. And then that's okay. And we ended it on a good note because I wrote her a replete email, which I usually do not do. And I just said, look, I've written this. Don't believe if you don't want to. Just stick this in a corner somewhere. And if it ever crosses your mind that what I told you was, in fact, not what I wanted to be the truth, but what I have seen as the shape of things to come, all right, just understand what you're involved with, and you do what you wish at that time. But optimism isn't going to get a lot done.
On that uplifting note, hey, I wanted to ask you, and this is, you know, thanks for sharing all that information on the order of the arrow and, you know, how this ties into our three amigos.
Mm-hmm.
And the end of the world as we know it, and going in a totally different direction now. I've made a habit of ending my shows by saying, until that time, Maxwell, until that time. And you had thrown out that phrase at me when one of our early interviews, he asked me,
mm-hmm.
do you know where this phrase comes from? And without missing a beat, I told you Soldier in the Rain with Steve McQueen, Jackie Gleason,
yeah.
Tuesday World. And yeah, I guess you had a little story about that phrase.
Oh, with what? With
relating to a friend of yours?
Oh, you know, the thing is, yeah, I had a good friend in Jersey in the times when I was living there, and we used to do a lot of philosophizing in the days when you could get down to the Hudson River on the Jersey side. It's been very, very much gentrified and tonied and all this. But in the late 70s, the docks were in ruin. But, you know, there's a certain charm to that, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you one little special thing. I mean, if you want to get out of here on the hour, well, I guess I won't have time. You tell me.
No, don't worry about that.
Okay. He and I used to do a lot of philosophizing. It wasn't really a great period for either one of us. We'd go down to the river with a six-pack of beer, and we'd just talk about it. And whenever he would drop me off or we would part, he used to say to me, until that time, Max, until that time. There is something about that line spoken by Gleason in his character. What was it, the sergeant, I guess?
Soldier in the Rain.
And he was, I guess he was of some rank over Steve McQueen. He was a real rhubarb in the movie, right?
Right, yeah.
And I think Gleason is probably on his way out. And the last time that McQueen, I think, will see him alive. And he says, until that time, Max, until that time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can only tell you there's a certain melancholy tone to that that has always stuck with me.
Yeah, it's great seeing the great beyond, really, is what he was saying.
And I'll be honest with you, one of the last times that individual and I were together, we were down the docks, and it was one of those days in the dog days of the summer. My God, it was just, it was like 99 degrees. The sky was white. The sun looked like a light bulb, you know, behind a muslin curtain. And it was just filthy. You just sat there drinking beer and sweating even harder. And we're facing the skyline at River's Edge, which is beautiful. And this guy comes down, I kid you not, with just a pair of slacks on and a musical case. And we're watching all this, and this guy goes out and walks precariously across, you know, these beams that have no more plywood across them. He pulls out a saxophone. And, man, he starts wailing on that, and it was outstanding. But what happens is, as he plays and plays and plays, the wind starts kicking up. The sky starts to blacken behind the skyline from the east. and this deluge came, and it was almost like a reverse Orpheus, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It just, like, it broke the heat. It was a relief. This guy packed up his saxophone and went from back from wherever he came. So, at any rate.
Sounded like a shaman.
Well, it's just one of those moments. I mean, in life, yeah. I mean, that is just magical. And like I said, I always think of that, and I always think of old Tom just telling me, you know, until that time, Max, until that time. Okay.
On that note, Viz, we're going to wrap it up. Thanks for coming on the show. It was a great one. Continue your good work.
Well, thanks for having me. I mean, you know, our relationship has always been very pleasant.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean it isn't informative, but it's just one of these ones that you look forward to a little bit more than others. And I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, and long may you run.
Hey, thanks, man. Give
Adios.
My best to Lady Viz and your bird.
Okay.
Four birds.
All right. Thanks very much. You
okay.
Have a good night.
You too.
Right, bye-bye.
So that wraps up another amazing episode of Untamed Dimensions. Join us here each and every week, my friends. And with that note, I wish you a good night. God bless. Keep those cards and letters coming, all of you out there in the great American heartland, to the pyramidal structures on Mars. Until that time, Maxwell. Until that time.
Filmways presentation, darling.